1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Welcome to the program. On today's show, we'll have a bit of a preview, since I'll have no show tomorrow due to travel issues. I'll have a preview of the Murray State Eastern Kentucky men's basketball game. The Racers still looking for that elusive first true road win. They've won neutral side games, but nothing as far as a true road victory. This is a big test on Wednesday night. We'll go into that game. And a little later on, Josh Planos, Washington Post contributor, will be my guest. We'll talk NFL playoffs. We'll talk about an article he wrote concerning the San Antonio Spurs and how their bench is doing a wonderful job for them, having a big season. Now, Golden State took them to task last night, but they've been taking everybody to task, so don't worry too much about that. The Spurs are having a terrific season. We'll try to find out a bit why with Josh Planos, who'll also talk a little college basketball with us as well. That's a little later on in the show. Before we get to anything else, let's congratulate the Murray High girls and boys on winning All-A Classic Region 1 championships. This tournament is essentially the small school state tournament in Kentucky, and Murray High will be going to the state. Macy Turley with 18 points as the Murray girls defeated Carlisle County 71-31. The Murray boys get 23 from Preston English, 21 from James Boone. They beat Carlisle County 77-58. They move on to Frankfort as well. Murray will actually play Wednesday night at 6:30 at 5:30 in Frankfort, 4:30 the airtime on WNBS. The boys will play Thursday, 7 p.m. is the tip-off time, central time, and we're on the air with the pregame at 6 o'clock. The boys play Bishop Brossard, and the Murray girls will take on Greene County. Over in the second region, boys, UHA moved on to the state, beating Dawson Springs 89-55. Now let's talk college basketball. The Murray State Racers will look for their first road win of the season when they play at McBrayer Arena in Richmond tomorrow night, somewhere where they've had a lot of success. They've lost one time in the last 6 years. In 2008, they lost. They've won five straight games there, but it's the first meeting since 2014. The teams have gone to divisions, which means you play either Eastern or Moorhead, and whoever you play at home, you play the other team on the road. That gives you one long trip. That's not the old Death Valley trip of days gone by where you play one team Thursday, the next team on Saturday. But this is a team the Racers will face. It's been very good in the early part of the season. However, lately they've lost three of four of their last six. They've had, and I've tried to find out a couple of defections of players, and I have no idea why. They're just not on the team anymore. They're just gone. They're off the roster. They don't have them in their game notes. They do show up in their stats, and that's it. But the starting five is really good, and I'll tell you what, we're about to see one terrific freshman, maybe the freshman of the year, and at least at this point, I don't see anyone that can compete with Nick Mayo, 6'9 freshman. He averages 14.1 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. But here's a kid at 6'9". He's knocking down, and I'm not making this up, 69% from three-point range. Now, he hasn't shot a lot of them. I think he shot 13, but when he steps out, he can pop one. Good free throw shooter. He is a future star in the Ohio Valley Conference. Their leading scorer, Jarrell Rochelle, he's a 6'7 senior, comes in averaging a OVC best 19.3 points per game. He's also a really good rebounder, 7.6. He's a Rhode Island transfer. He's a one-year guy. He is really, really good. And their third guy is a South Florida transfer, Javante Hawkins. He's a 6'5 junior. He averages 16.7 points and 5 rebounds per contest. They have a terrific three-point shooter in Isaac McGlone. He doesn't shoot many, but when he shoots, he knocks them down at a 44% clip. Very dangerous. He is averaging 5 points per contest, and Paul Jackson runs the show. He averages 6.5 points per game. He can also make a three at 40%. Rochelle, by the way, at 6'7", shoots 38%. They want to get up and down the floor. They want the game in the 80s or 90s, as evidenced by their average of 82.3 points per game. but they give up 80.8 points per contest. With those defections, the bench not as strong as they would like for it to be. They do get contributions from Jalen Babb Harrison, who averages 6 points per contest. He's a 44% three-point shooter. Jamil Powell, 6'7 senior, averaging 4.4 points per game. And Greg King, a 5'7 sophomore, who averages 3 points per contest. So just like the Racers, not a deep bench. They have essentially the same size as Murray State in the starting lineup, so not a lot of advantages there. Dan McHale, in his first season at Eastern Kentucky, he's a Kentucky graduate, but a former Rick Pitino assistant at the University of Louisville, and he likes that style, the up-and-down style. It's a fun style to watch, and when they're making shots, I'm telling you, they're dangerous. They're really good when they're knocking down shots, and they've been very good at home, where they are 10-2 on the season. The Racers come in at 10-10, 4-3 in the OVC, but they are in first place in the OVC West. Meanwhile, Eastern Kentucky, they're in last place at 3-4. It gives you an idea of how strong the East is and how weak overall that the West has been. Let's just call it what it is. That's exactly what we have to this point of the season. Racers come in, though, playing much better. 2 weeks ago, they lost two games but played better basketball against Belmont and Tennessee State. And then this week, it paid off this past week with victories over Eastern Illinois and SIU Edwardsville. So the Racers, if they could come up with a win here, it would go a long way to perhaps securing a divisional title. But it's too early to talk about that. But this would be big. If they lose this one, they're right back there in a bunch with Eastern Illinois, back with UT Martin. But two victories this week, the Racers could be sitting pretty in terms of the rest of the season, even though I think Eastern Illinois probably has the easier schedule down the stretch, to be honest about that. But what the Racers need to do is keep winning. As long as they're in first place, they'll be in great shape. We're on the air with the game at 6:25, a 7:25 or 7 o'clock tip-off. At least Central Time, it's 8 o'clock up there. Why? Well, they have the women's game. It's not the Racer women. I don't even know who they're playing, but there's a women's game before that. That's the reason that we're playing so late. And the Racer women, meanwhile, will be here in Murray taking on Eastern Illinois. So if you're in town, make plans to go out and support them. As that one, by the way, will not be on radio due to our high school coverage, but you can watch it and hear Quentin Taylor make the call for you on the OVC Digital Network. All right. A few other things on college basketball. Kentucky freshman sharpshooter Jamal Murray, the SEC Freshman of the Week, helped the Cats to a pair of double-digit wins at Arkansas and against Vandy. Average 18.5 points a game, 7 rebounds per contest. It's his second honor of the season. Kentucky will host Mizzou tomorrow night at 8. In an SEC Network televised game. Oklahoma still the number one team in the latest AP poll. North Carolina number two. Iowa third. Fourth is Kansas. Fifth, their highest ranking ever, thanks to former Murray State head coach Billy Kennedy. Texas A&M comes in at number five. Rounding out the top 10, Villanova, Xavier, Maryland, West Virginia, and Providence. Steve Prohm's Iowa State team number 14. Louisville 16th. Kentucky number 20. Speaking of Prohm, nice win for Steve last night. Gave him a congratulatory text. He had his, I think, Cass, his youngster, at the press conference after beating down Kansas 85-72. They outscored him 49-29 in the second half. An amazing performance. A little bit of a rocky start for Steve with that loss at home to Northern Iowa. But since then, wins over number one, number three, and number four. That's quite a way to build a tournament resume. All right, I'm going to take a break. Josh Planos is my guest right after this timeout.
Join Racer Athletics Wednesday night at 6 for Daddy Daughter Night at the women's basketball game against Eastern Illinois. General admission tickets are just $5, and all Daddy Daughter pairings will receive a foam finger horseshoe as well as a complimentary bag of popcorn. You won't look back at the games you watch from the couch. Call for tickets at 270-809-3000 or visit goracers.com.
Welcome back. As promised, Josh Planos, contributor of the Washington Post, is my guest. And we have been talking a lot of NFL, and we're now down to Super Bowl 50's matchup this past weekend, Josh. As I watched the games, I thought it became very clear. I just want to get your take. I'm actually shocked that New England made it as far as they did, but their offensive line really got exposed because they had no protection for Tom Brady, who wasn't allowed to work his magic in the end. Still came pretty close to pulling off the win against Denver.
Oh, sure. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think that he was pretty much on his back the whole game. You know, he got sacked four times, and I have to imagine he got pressured at least 10. It seemed like every time he was trying to drop back and pass, you know, Von Miller, you know, DeMarcus Ware was just, you know, kind of right up in front of him, and he didn't really have any breathing space. And, you know, to see New England almost, you know, pull off that comeback was pretty remarkable, you know, considering the circumstances. I also didn't think that, you know, Manning was going to be as effective as he was. I certainly didn't think that he was going to complete more than 50% of his passes. But, you know, he's, you know, a general out on the field and is kind of known for being able to, you know, take care of the ball when the team needs it in the postseason. And, you know, he certainly did that.
He looked a little bit more, less a manager and more a quarterback this past week. I thought the last week he was basically just managing the game. Looked a little bit better this week. Is he getting healthier, or did things just happen to hook up in his favor that day?
You know, it seemed like there was definitely a disparity between, you know, his second half performance and his first half performance. I listened to the first half on the radio and, you know, was able to kind of go back and watch some of the tape, and it looked like he was, you know, kind of throwing paper airplanes in the first half. You know, balls that didn't have any velocity on them. And then, you know, you just kind of assumed that as the game wore on, that, you know, it would become a more and more frequent, you know, thing that would be happening for him. But it seemed like he tightened up in the second half and was able to throw in some bullets, and it was just kind of surprising. It seemed like, you know, one throw he'd, you know, not be able to you know, complete a pass 5 yards downfield, and then the next throw, you know, he'd throw a line drive that was 25 yards to the, you know, to the sideline. So I think it was just a mix of both, but you're right. I mean, he certainly seemed much improved from a week ago, and, you know, his team is still dropping a ton of his passes, and, yeah. You know, who's to say that, you know, should Demaryius Thomas or Ronnie Hillman come down with a couple of those balls, you know, this game wouldn't have been, you know, blown wide open.
The Carolina-Arizona game, in a few weeks, I have to admit, I sort of fell in love with the Arizona Cardinals. I thought, this is going to be the team to win the Super Bowl. I even felt confident when they fell behind early against Carolina, thinking, that's all right, Carolina, they didn't have a good second half last week, probably won't this week. Boy, was I shocked. Carolina just completely rolls Arizona. And in terms of what I saw this weekend, Carolina, to me, looked like the team to beat. They had looked good in a couple of games, not so good in a couple of others where I watched them. But they certainly looked the part this past weekend. What did you think, Josh?
I mean, defensively, they were just terrific. I mean, to put Arizona in a 17-0 hole, you know, by the start of the second quarter, I think, you know, really put the team you know, in a disadvantageous situation. And, you know, Carson Palmer did what he could to try and bring the team back, but, you know, he made some pretty terrible throws, and, you know, Carolina made him pay for them. Obviously, Luke Kuechly is, you know, one of the best defensive players in the NFL, and, you know, he had a pick six, and, I mean, Carson got sacked three times, yeah. Too. His offensive line had similar issues with you know, fronting Carolina, as did you know, Denver or New England with Denver, but you know, I didn't expect it to be this lopsided. I have to admit, you know, Carolina's been, you know, pretty much the most dominant team the whole season, but you know, to see them, you know, thwack Arizona 49-15, I think was a surprise to everyone. They were, you know, the Carolina fans who just assumed that they're going to blow out everybody. But like we talked about last week, you know, if Carolina can get its running game going, you know, they're going to open up some opportunities in the passing lanes. And, you know, Jonathan Stewart had 83 yards on the ground, and that's, you know, what, the fourth consecutive game that Arizona's allowed 80-plus by the team's starting running back. So, you know, they didn't really do their job defensively, and certainly Arizona's offense didn't help them out any.
One of the worst Super Bowls I've ever seen involved Peyton Manning. What about this one, Super Bowl 50? I know we'll talk specifically about it in a couple of weeks, but at least on the surface here, 2 weeks out, What do you think about how this one will be? Does this have the potential to be a blowout, or will we have a good one?
You know, I think we'll have a good one. I think that defensively, Denver is much improved from where they were the last time they got to the Super Bowl. And, you know, obviously the easy comparison is that, you know, Seattle's defense was terrific the year they you know, just throttled Denver in the Super Bowl. But, you know, that Denver defense was pretty pretty tepid and really kind of inconsistent throughout the season,
right.
Whereas, you know, this Denver defense, I don't know if you could have played a better defensive game than they did last week. And so should Denver's offense struggle, you know, I think they'll give them some opportunities that maybe the last iteration of the Broncos to make the Super Bowl, you know, wasn't able to. And so I think it'll be much closer. I still think you have to give Carolina the edge, just given on you know, what they just did this weekend, dismantling Arizona in a game that really meant a lot for Carson Palmer. I mean, him and Larry Fitzgerald, you know, who knows if they'll ever get back to that stage again, you know, with a shot to qualify for their first Super Bowl. But, you know, just to destroy a team, both offensively and defensively, I think you got to give Carolina the edge, but my money's on it being a close game, and I'm sure the Vegas, spread books will see it similarly.
A bit about the NBA. You had an article this past week about the San Antonio bench and the job that they're doing, the Spurs, just making an incredible season come true for them. They did run into a bit of a buzzsaw last night. They were a bit behind the eight ball from an injury standpoint, 120-90, but Golden State's been buzzing everybody. But it's another terrific year for the San Antonio Spurs, and as you point out, the bench is one of the big reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't look so good last night, obviously, in the the matchup that everyone was kind of waiting for was the San Antonio Golden State matchup. 538 even went as far as to say that it was the best regular season matchup of all time, just given where the two teams were in reference to the 538 algorithm. But, you know, to see Golden State just whack them by 30 points was pretty surprising to most. A big part of San Antonio's success has been their bench. I think entering this week, they had like a plus 17 net rating, which if it held steady would be the best net rating in the history of the NBA, at least since they first started calculating the statistic. And, you know, that's pretty impressive because, you know, you consider when the bench takes the floor, it's a pretty optimal opportunity for the opponent to, you know, maybe earn a couple points back and, you know, make the contest a little tighter while the starters are sitting and getting some air. But, San Antonio's bench simply just isn't letting them do that. And they have as good a scouting team as any team in the league, and obviously, you know, they bring in Boban Marjanovic, who's the 7'3" Serbian that nobody's heard of, but you know, here he is,
right,
his first year in the NBA, you know, contributing both on the offense and defensive side of the ball, and they have 14 or 15 players that can play in a given night and prove to be effective. And I'm sure the Los Angeles Lakers, for example, would love to have a bench like that, whereas right now, as soon as their starters leave the floor, it just, you know, they collapse.
Sure.
and drown to the bottom of the ocean. So San Antonio's bench is, you know, really kind of putting them in a nice spot. This is obviously a much better team than, at least at this point in the season, than any under Popovich. So, we'll see how far they can take it.
Did Golden State, was this just an off night for San Antonio, or did Golden State pretty much answer the call that this is supposed to be a big game, we need to make a major statement with this one, and they did? How did that go?
I think a lot of it's just going to come down to, you know, whether or not they can really stop Steph Curry, because obviously everyone in the league knows that he's the best player in the game right now. But, you know, they threw Kawhi Leonard, the reigning defensive player of the year, at him. They threw Tony Parker at him, someone who's a little bit more his size. They threw Danny Green on him. I think Rasual Butler got some minutes, and, you know, he just toasted them. He had, 37 points, shot over 50% from the field. So they really didn't have an answer for the best player on the floor, and, you know, that's to be expected. But I guess I just expected Kawhi Leonard to match up a little bit better with him, you know, considering how much of a hawking defender he is. But, you know, you let Golden State shoot above 50% from the field and 40% from beyond the arc, and, you know, you're almost guaranteed to lose. So I think defensively they've got some progress to be made, and obviously they played without Tim Duncan, so you know who knows how much that affected the game plan. But you don't want to look too far into it, but this is, you know, their one really big matchup with them for the foreseeable future, and it wasn't a shootout like everyone expected. It was, you know, incredibly lopsided. So, you know, San Antonio's got to be pleased with where they're at. It's their first loss in as many weeks. But, you know, I think that they expected to come out and be a little bit more competitive than they were.
Before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of college basketball conferences. Of course, the Big Ten, other than Indiana and Iowa, they're at the top at 7-0. They're punching each other in the face. Nebraska getting that big win over Michigan State. Then you head to the Big 12. They're doing it to one another. Iowa State gets another win over Kansas. Steve Prohm has beaten number one, number three, and number four in his tenure there. It's fun watching these leagues, but it also shows just how many great teams there are in both the Big Ten and the Big 12, Josh.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit last week, and it rings true again. You know, these conferences are just superpowers right now, and like you said, if Nebraska can get a big win over Michigan State, then really anybody can get a big win. At least in the Big Ten, because Nebraska was just reeling, and now they've got a resume boosting win.
Sure.
That's one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. Top to bottom, these conferences are really putting forth some impressive ball, and you have to assume that they're going to cannibalize each other a little bit, considering conference play is in full swing right now. But as far as the current landscape, it seems to be a Big 12 and a Big 10 showdown, and North Carolina, I know, is the number two team in the country, but after them, you kind of look down the rankings, and it takes you a little while to see anything other than Big 10 and Big 12.
Yeah.
At least around these parts, it seems to be a really exciting time. I know that Nebraska fans are probably looking at another season in which they won't qualify for the NCAA tournament, but if even Nebraska fans are getting excited about Big Ten conference play, it's not just because the team's been successful. It's because on any given night they can host a top five, a top two, a top 15 team, at Pinnacle Bank Arena, and that's an exciting time for all involved.
Sure is. Josh, again, appreciate the visit and your conversation on all the topics. Look forward to talking with you next week.
Sure thing. Have a good week.
All right, that is Josh Planos.